now, back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. Award-winning, best-selling author Lee Eisenberg has done it again. He's written a New York Times bestseller, The Number, and now he comes back with another interesting, provocative book. Provocative, at least from my standpoint, and interesting to read, challenging to read in many respects, because it keeps challenging you to say why you're here, what you're doing, what is good, what your story is, if you will. Lee Eisenberg, and by the way, you can find out more about the book. Not only can you get it at Amazon, etc., but it is Lee Eisenberg, EisenBerg.com. Lee, tell us what, and I'm going to, like readers, try and pretend I haven't read this. So tell us what you mean by stories and what the mind story is.
Well, I set out, you know, I'm a man of a certain age, not that there's an age requirement for this, but after decades of working hard and raising a family and moving my family from city to city, I suddenly one day woke up and I said, hey, maybe it's time for me to take a deep breath and take stock of what all of this career and family life and trials and tribulations, what does it all mean? You know, how did I get to this point? And at the end of the day, what does it all mean? You know, it's a fundamental question that man has been asking himself since the beginning of time, and I don't profess to be the first. So I embarked on this journey to try to answer for myself, how did I get to be me? Does my story add up in any way? Is there still time for me to redirect my life story? And what, in the end, are we here for? And how do we, you know, how do we render a verdict as to whether our lives are meaningful or not? So with that, I said, okay, where do you start? Because it's not exactly the easiest assignment. So I basically started three ways simultaneously. I started reading a lot, and I don't have to tell you or your listeners that there's no end of literature on whether or not life has meaning, and if so, what is it? The other thing I did was I talked to scores and scores of people of all ages, from, you know, millennials in their 20s all the way up to seniors. And then finally, I went back and I retraced my own personal steps, my memories, going back to as far back as my memories took me. And it was in looking back at my memories and in combination with talking and reading that I came to the conclusion that whether or not we think our life is meaningful has a lot to do with the life story that we have, without knowing it, created in our brains about ourselves. Something we start creating when we're about 3 years old, which is when the brain begins to have the capacity to collect memories. And then, interestingly enough, something happens simultaneously with that. And that is that our brain begins to understand stories. It has a capacity for narrative, as it's called. So we start creating this life story out of memories. And we add memories as time goes along, and we have turning points, and we have chapters, and we, you know, all these things that apply to an actual written story, but the story exists in our head. And I came to the conclusion that how we read that story, and, you know, read in quotes, has a lot to do with whether we think our life is fulfilling and meaningful or not.
Is this essentially the story that you're talking about creating? Is the story, if you will, of your as though you would have a you would be at your own funeral and reading your eulogy. This is the eulogy story as opposed to the resume story. That is, I'm blanking on the book earlier this year that was written on the resume story versus the eulogy story. But it seems like you're really talking about, in the same way, about what is, when do we switch from thinking about a CV or resume story in thinking about what we'd like to be known about after.
Yeah, I'm definitely more of a, I guess, a eulogy story, although, and it's kind of a, I don't mean to put it in such pessimistic or morbid terms. If I were to ask you right now, Dr. Mike, to tell me your life story, and depending on how much time we had and how much you were inclined to reveal parts of your life story, you could tell me your life story from beginning all the way up to the present. I could ask you, what do you think it means? I could ask you, what's the genre of that story? Is it a comedy? Is it a tragedy? Is it a farce? Is it a romantic comedy? You know, what is it? And there's a leading character. That leading character is you. There have been all kinds of other characters who've entered the story and left. Some of them have entered the story and stayed. If I were to ask you what your most important chapter is, you'd be able to tell me. If I asked you, you know, what chapter of your life would you most like to delete? You could probably tell me that. So that story you walk around, we all walk around with inside our heads. And it occurred to me that we often don't sit and reread or reexamine that story sufficiently to get a really good sense of whether our story is meaningful or not. For example, a lot of meaningful things happen to us, but we forget about them. You know, we're very busy people. We go through life and we may see a beautiful sunset, or we may have an extraordinary interpersonal experience that passes very quickly, and we often don't take time to either write it down, for example, in a diary or a journal, so that we don't forget about it. We just go on with our lives. And one of the things I discovered in going back through my own life is that there were scores of very, very important and meaningful experiences, events, short-term relationships, and other things that I kind of discounted. I didn't really appreciate them at the time. So one of the strong suggestions I have in the book is to try to record some of the things, even on a daily basis, that really meant something to you, because it's shocking to the degree when we go back and reexamine something, how much more meaningful or satisfying or fulfilling it actually was. So it may be that we're all sitting around with a lot more meaning in our life, but a lot of it has sort of gone in one ear and out the other.
Now, some of this is, as you read through the book, and I'm telling the listeners this, as you read through the book, it's impossible to not start to do what you've suggested. That is, think about it. And many of them are twists and turns. So, for example, initially I started wanting to find how, in my own life, how memory is formed and what the major function is in memory, and then how to, if you will, improve memory or keep memory. Not because I thought enough about the crisis in that we're having in, if you will, cognitive dysfunction going forward in Alzheimer's disease, because that wasn't a prominent thing at that time in life, but because I thought it was an unstudied area and it really was what was the essence of human beings, that is memory. And so I went into, in fact, anesthesia research, because anesthesia takes away and certain drugs take away, and so I figured by going at that route. And in that process, I went and did another turn to the point where it is, initially it was supporting, then it was, if you will, building a laboratory that did this and supporting developing others who could do this too. And then it was, how do you stop chronic disease, if you will, in general? And so when I look at it, do many people have the kind of turns and twists that I'm telling you that your book stimulated me to think about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I were to ask you, you know, tell me what were the three or five or six most important turning points in your life? Most people can rattle those off, or what was the most important turning point. It may or may not really have been the most important, but you've made it the most important in your story. The thing about memory, if I can go back to it for a second, is this is a book about memory.
Let me start you with that the next segment, because we're going to take a break. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Lee Eisenberg as our guest. The book is The Point Is, LeeEisenberg.com. We'll be right back.
There's more of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Presented by the Radio MD Network.
Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. In the second hour, we're coming up. 8 professions that could hurt your heart, make you fat, and what professions to make sure if you're going into, you adopt healthy behaviors. It's important because we also are going to talk about if you have just one more fruit and vegetable than the average person, you decrease your risk for all-cause mortality by about 30%. If everyone in the world did it, we'd save 3.5 million lives every 2 years. That's 1.7 million lives a year would be saved. And if it would just happen in the U.S., we'd save, just by having one more fruit per person in the U.S., we'd be saving over $50 billion in the federal budget, over $200 billion in all budgets of the, if you will, our nation. Pretty remarkable data accumulated, and we'll talk about that in the second hour. The cure for food, junk food cravings, we'll talk about that. And just go with Joe, why energy drinks aren't as good as just coffee, from a health standpoint, in any case. And that's some of the stories that are coming up that we'll have to get to. But that waterlogged app, and we have nothing to do with the ads on the show. They're recruited independently. We don't get approval on them. They don't ask us for approval on them. But waterlogged, that app, you heard the story today that if you take 3 extra glasses of water a day, you decrease your consumption of calories by about 205. That alone would cure the obesity crisis in America over a 20-year period. It would take a while, obviously, but taking water is important. And what we're doing now is also important. It's by a book by Lee Eisenberg. Lee, EISENBERG.com. The book is The Point Is, and we were talking about memory. Lee, I interrupted you while you were talking about memory and a key point in our memories.
Yeah, I just wanted to add one thing, which is, you know, we all walk around and we take our memories for granted. But the fact is that, the stories we make out of our memories, without stringing those memories together into those chapters that add up to our life story, we would be absolutely lost in time and space. It is through those memories and how we put them together that we are actually able to make life coherent. We certainly can make our own personal life coherent, but we make life itself coherent. So, which is, you know, as you know, as a physician, which, you know, one of the great tragedies, of course, so when memory is impaired, Alzheimer's or anything else, is that life loses its coherence. It doesn't add up. And that's why it's so important to us to almost honor our memories, celebrate our memories, be very careful with our memories, and go back from time to time and relook at memories in a different light, in a different context, at a different time of our life, because often we underappreciate certain memories when they happen. And if the book does anything, I hope it raises our consciousness about how extraordinarily valuable our life story is, and how important the memories are that make it up. So I just wanted to add that. The test at the end of the book?
Yeah, but let me get there in a peculiar way. Part of what I see this book is trying to do is a call to action for you to think about, if you will, that your life story, and to do so in a way that may actually have you change your actions to become more meaningful. And you also do that with this, what I would call these bullet point or wake up or aha moments at the end, where in the appendix you have the meaning in life questionnaire, just 10 questions. You have a purpose in life test. You have the death attitude profile revealed. And a number of, if you will, what I would call these tests that are trying to get us awake, as well as an exercise for book groups. Is that what you're trying to do to drive us?
Yeah, that's what I am trying to do. These exercises are tests at the end of the book. I did not come up with these. These are very, very widely used tests, questionnaires, that are used principally by psychologists and to some degree anthropologists. And they're not necessarily designed to indicate whether you're happy or you're depressed. What they are designed to do is to create a baseline, if you will, so that a psychologist or a sociologist can go out into the world and compare different groups on the basis of whether those groups are searching for meaning, are feeling satisfied in life, and so on and so forth. So while they're really interesting for each of us to take, and most people I know, when they buy the book, they immediately go back to the end and take these questionnaires. They're quite revealing. One of them is a very simple. It's a 10-question test that basically is the meaning in life questionnaire, which is really intended to determine the degree to which you feel you are experiencing meaning, or the degree to which you are searching for something meaningful. And so that's number one. The second one is called the purpose in life test. And the purpose in life test, is somewhat more lengthy. It's, I think it's about, 20 questions. It's been used in hundreds, if not thousands of various studies and experiments. And it's basically, designed to, illuminate questions such as, you know, people who've had heart attacks versus people who have not had heart attacks. Do they vary as groups in terms of whether they, how they're perceiving whether their life has any purpose? Does a heart attack change the perception one might have of whether one's life has purpose? There have been studies that, you know, try to compare different ethnic groups. You know, are Caucasians more likely to feel that life is purposeless than perhaps African Americans? So I'm just making this up, or country to country. So they're very, very interesting. And then finally, I think the most interesting one is something called the Death Attitude Profile, which is designed to gauge to what degree we are either accepting of the idea of our own death, or to what degree are we anxious about the idea that we are all going to die. I found that, you know, the fear of death, death avoidance, are you neutrally acceptance of death? Are you very open to the idea, even though you're not looking forward to it? Or in certain cases, do you see death as a, you know, if you will, an escape acceptance, which is that if you're very, very sick, or if you're very, very depressed, you know, there are some people who will take this test, and it will indicate that, you know, while they may not be eager to die, they are in many ways accepting of the idea. So these are all very
interesting. As you can tell, Lee and I could go on asking questions, because this is a really very provocative book. It provokes you to think about what you're doing and what your story is. I urge you, do get it. It is Lee Eisenberg, The Point Is, and LeeEisenberg.com is the way.